Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Hi, you're here to see Ian Fishwick, the CEO of Adept Telecom. Adept is one of our long-standing shareholdings across our client portfolios. We've probably held it for over 5 years. And what we like about it is that it's got some great attributes. It's grown its earnings progressively over the last 15 years. It's got a free cash flow yield of 7-8%. It pays a dividend. And it's got reoccurring revenue coming from the managed services division. And what Ian's managed to do over the years is migrate the business away from just being fixed line, selling bundled minutes, into something that's got reoccurring revenues with these managed services in IT. So a nice little business, but not that many people know about it. Let's go and see Ian. Ian, thanks for taking the time with us today. We're going to chat through how Adept has evolved over the last 15 or so years. Mm-hmm. But in the first instance, can you give me a bit of a flavour as to why you started Adept? Obviously, you listed in 2006, but what was the story before then?
I feel like a caricature, to be honest. I mean, I spent all my early career up to the age of 42 getting bigger and bigger jobs in big businesses. My last one was 250 million turnover. And at the age of 42, I thought, I've had enough of working for somebody else. I'll start again. And I think what dawned on us was, forget the sector for a minute. If you've built a family business to kind of one and a half million turnover, then you've done incredibly well. But how do you get rid of it? You know, everybody has to retire sometime or partners split up or whatever. At that point, you're too small for a VC and you can't start to... into telecoms, you can't ring up BT and say, I've got a million turnover business. It's just too small. So there was no natural trade buyer, really. So we deliberately set up and said, look, we know how to merge things, because buying them is in a sense the easy bit. That's just getting the money. And we spent the first, certainly 5 years, buying up lots of businesses that had lots of very small businesses, hairdressers type things. Because the mantra was, nobody can make money out of things like that. They don't spend enough. Right? And our view was, that's not true. If you automate the back office of it, then you will. And it worked. So that was the start.
And you came to market and you've been highly acquisitive since then. Really, yeah. 24 deals that you've done over that period.
Yeah.
So what's the criteria for an acquisition that you might be looking at?
Well, it depends what you're looking for and what phase you're at. So up till 2008, it was very much, we're just trying to bulk up more and more small customers. And then about 2008, we had a bit of a sea change. We could see that BT gets often maligned, but let's be fair, in this century, they spent about $10 billion building the 21st century network. And when we had a proper look at, you know, what products were coming out of that, it was super fast things like, if you get, say, 10 megabit connectivity at your home, it was 100 megabit or a gigabit, 1,000 megabits. Mm. And going back to the hairdresser, a hairdresser isn't going to buy stuff like that. So we said, look, you know, we're going to have to go up the food chain and start having much bigger customers. So we stayed in connectivity, but between 2008 and 15, we started to buy people who had much bigger customers, and we've got quite a lot of big national brand names. But by 2015, even though we're providing whatever connectivity you wanted to the outside world, everything from a simple broadband out to big, complex networks, but we didn't really go inside the building or not, right? So from 2015 onwards, it's been very much going inside and doing unified comms, you know, link all your devices together, do the Wi-Fi. Then we eventually moved into IT. So your criteria as to what you buy depends where you are and what you're looking for. What's the customer size? What's the skill set, etc. So it's changed over time.
So, Ian, some nice pictures here. But when we first invested about 6 years ago, in fact, I think I've known you since 2006, but Tunbridge Wells was the only site at that point. But I mean, clearly you've grown.
To be honest, from 2003 to 2015, this was the only site. This is where the first 19 deals were all brought into.
Yep.
So if I just take you through the chronology, because this is in the right order. So in May 15, this is when we first went inside the building, if you like. This was Unified Comms. So this is phone systems, linking together to all your various gadgets, doing Wi-Fi. And these were the guys that also brought us two great verticals. This brought us 70% of all the private hospitals in London, and this is where it brought us the business centres. So there's about 200 business centres. We probably service around about half of all the business centres in London. Now, the issue we were starting to have was these guys don't look at small stuff. So a year later, May 16, and this is where we say some years we do one, some years we do more, we bought Comms Group in Northampton, and they both use Avaya technology. This is Aura for the top end stuff. This is IP Office. But you can see here, this is physically a warehouse because they have an online, it's a classic online shop. So a lot of their leads are people going on, buying stuff from there, and then they ring them back and say, do you want to know what else we do? And then most of the sales and follow-up sale. So that gave us a kind of top-to-bottom UC.
And just a stupid question. You've got these businesses sitting separately, yeah, physically. How do you get them to cross-sell and incentivise to make sure that if there's a lead that comes in Fleet, that actually, if it's not their size, that it gets passed across to Northampton?
So the first thing that we do is we bring them all into the same finance systems and get them reporting exactly the same way in a matter of weeks. Then we do group buying deals, so we get the benefits of sourcing, like, you know, one big deal with BT Wholesale, one with Gamma or whatever. Then we start to hold sales conferences where each of the businesses, we almost do a welcome. When we buy somebody, we do an event where the new business explains who they are and all the other ones stand back and reciprocate. Then you stick all the sales guys in a bar together and they go and find the new friend. Let them work out all the details of it. And that's where it grows.
Yeah.
So at this point, we were doing full unified comms but no IT. And we spent 2 years looking for IT businesses back on our, you know, we only buy one out of 12. So that was May 16, and then in February 17, we bought our IT. Now, they're the ones who've got the great name for an outsourced IT department. We called our IT department. You know, who are you going to call? Our IT department. Right. So the service teams are in Chingford and St. Neots, but interestingly, all the sales team, this is actually one of our business centres. So we thought, well, why not spend some money with our own customers and go in there? And that brought us loads of IT skills, but no public sector. So if that was February 2017, 6 months later, exactly, 1st of August, we then bought Atomwide. And that's what brought us all the IT for education and the 3,000 schools, the whole of London, etc. So that's where we sit at the moment. Those are the five operating entities.
And if you go back to when we first invested here, your fixed line business was probably 60 to 70%, and now you're 70% the other way.
Correct.
Managed services revenue, which is obviously quite sticky.
Yeah, correct, absolutely.
You're very strict in the acquisitions that you make in terms of the criteria. What kind of conversion rate do you have on the number of companies that you look at and that you actually do?
On average, we buy one out of every 12 we look at. So we're looking at things every single week. And you develop filters. Some of them you can knock out in the first 20, 30 minutes. Some of them take a bit longer. So if you want to get an idea of what are the types of things that we filter on, customer size. We're not really at the moment into buying thousands of small customers. We'd like a bit more medium size. Geography. If we're doing something new, we have this rule that says it's got to be in Towers Drive so that we can get there if it goes wrong. It doesn't go wrong, but it's nice to know that you can. You know, so I mean, in Tommy Joel's, I wouldn't try something brand new and base it in Belfast or Newcastle. It's too far, right? We never overpay. We're very strict in terms of what we'll pay. We often ask you, what's your claim to fame? Be really careful on that one, because if you've got one, we probably don't like you. You know, because it often tends to be, I've got one or two massive customers, and we hate that. The flip side is, we can't announce big contract wins because we don't want somebody who's a massive proportion of what we do. So I think part of the reason why we've had such a long run of successful acquisitions is it's more about what we reject and don't do rather than what we do.
Yep. And how many deals would you like to do next year?
I think it'll always be somewhere between one and three. Right. There's never been a year where we haven't done one. Once it gets more than three, that's doing one a quarter. It's a bit tough, a bit beyond that. So probably one to three. That's historically what we've done.
And your current debt facility and obviously your cash generation helps you as well. So are you going to start doing bigger deals, or what's the rough EBITDA level you're looking at?
The current run rate is 10.5. So one simplistic metric is, does it shift the EBITDA dial 10%?
Yep.
Okay, so, you know, it needs to be about £1 million to do a deal. That's a guideline, not a cast iron rule, right? So in reality, we're looking at anything between £500,000 and £2.5 million. And the reason why I'm kind of suggesting a cap of £2.5 million, I'm not saying it's an exact number, is once you get above that, you start to move into the territory where private equity guys want to compete against you, and they can borrow multiples of 6-7 times EBITDA, and therefore, in general, I would suggest they tend to overpay, or they pay more than I would do. We don't want that competition.
And the market is still very fragmented, isn't it? Even if you're just looking at the geography that you are. Enough deals about?
There's loads of deals about. I mean, at the end of the day, there's what, 2.5 million businesses in the UK? We tend to talk about the 1,000 that are all well known. You know, the reality is the vast bulk of the UK is under 5 million turnover. The vast bulk is under 2 million turnover. We're trying to build a bigger IT business in London. When I ask people, so who's the dominant IT support provider? The answer is nobody can answer it because there isn't one. It's lots of little fragmented people. So there's no shortage of deals.
What's the most difficult situation you've been in with one of your acquisitions?
It'd be wrong to say any of them have gone wrong, because that implies that they didn't turn out good deals. There was one that was disappointing, right? The reason why the banks have always liked what we do is we put an element of money down, and then we effectively have an earnout where we pay for what we get. And I could sit up here all day and say, I think your growth's going to be 7% and you say 17%, and what's the point of going down that route? Right, it'll be what it'll be, and we're very happy to pay for that. We had one situation where, and I'm going back a dozen years, so this is a long time ago, we ask you to warrant when we buy you that none of your big customers are leaving. And there was one where we realised that within the first 2 months, half the customers had left, and the guy just lied. But there, we simply went on a plane to wherever it was, right? So obviously it wasn't that too near, because we got on a plane, right? And just said, there'll be no more money coming from us. Sign the form, say, we know what you've done, all the earnouts out. And that immediately recalibrated to be a sensibly priced deal, which ended up being smaller than what we had. So you've got to have mechanisms that protect yourself if it goes wrong.
Yeah. And what about situations, because you do base your entry price on earnout, which I think is a great way to do it, then you're going to at some point have your vendors sitting there with nice paychecks and then maybe wanting to head off and spend some time on the beach. How do you manage that process?
I think that's one of the key criteria when you're looking at things, because we had a look at some earlier on, but not all of them, is how are you going to run this and what happens if they change their mind? At the end of the day, if I say to you, I'm going to give you £5 million, and you say, no, I'm too young to pack in, you might change your mind once you've got the money in your pocket. So you've got to make sure that when you're buying someone, there is a natural second. So let's take an example. When we bought Fleet, there were three owners. The elder one of the three wanted to retire. The youngest one didn't. The middle one wasn't so sure. But we knew we had at least two there, right? When we bought our IT in Feb 17, we were worried that the seller was in his 50s, but there was another guy underneath who was 40-ish. So we could see very clearly what would happen if he decided, I want to step away. It's really key that you understand how you're going to do that.
Yeah, understand the motivations.
You're buying people at the end of the day.
Yeah.
All of the five businesses have got the separate finance teams, okay? And that's pretty key to making sure that the profitability stays at the level we want, okay? That's one of the first things we integrate. This is the connectivity business. This is Tunbridge Wells. So this is 17 of the 48 million. So it's around about a bit over a third of it. What surprises most people is this is actually looking after about 17,000 sites.
My goodness. Right.
So it's hard to compare if you've not been to another telecoms business like this, but it's got roughly a third of the staff of anywhere else. Typically, the main reason why we've always been 7-8 percentage points higher in EBITDA is not really the margin, it's because of lack of OPEX automating things like this. Okay, so if I give you some idea what's in it, I mean, here you've got 12 or 13,000 small businesses just in this one small section. And then here is where you've got everything from central government to there's nearly 40 councils in here, some huge national chains. So these are all the Premier guys, these are the bigger guys. And that's the fundamental difference in the approach that we've done, lack of OPEX.
Am I right in saying that you've got your own contact management system as well, that you've basically created yourselves?
We do have for the first two businesses, for Adept and Majors and Adept Fleet. When you get to the specialist stuff like IT, they have specific CRMs. Yep. When you get to the education guys, they're completely integrated in with all the education systems. So sometimes people think naively, oh, let's just put one set of systems everywhere.
Yeah.
Only if it's appropriate, and it's not.
Yeah. You've changed the mix of your revenue, obviously, as well. You're now 70-odd percent managed services, which has got a reoccurring nature round about it, which is clearly very attractive. How do you drive organic growth from that, as well as getting the growth coming through from acquisitions?
Well, top level, the 30% that's still the old Coles and Lines business is very profitable, very cash generative, so don't get rid of it. But it's shrinking, it's about 8% per annum. You know, the other day I had 17 WhatsApps from my kids, but no phone calls. You know, you can't change that kind of, but you don't get rid of it because it's making lots of money. The 70% that's in the managed service end is growing at about 8%. So you can do that simple maths, right? And that leaves you to about 3% organic growth. But all the new stuff that we're selling is in the more modern managed service end. So you can see it's going to go 3, 4, 5. So the key always was to get to the point where managed services was more than 50-50.
Yeah.
Because then it pushed you into growth. That was the challenge.
And your customers themselves are growing. You've got some very attractive sectors that you're in. You're in, I think you service all of London's private hospitals. You've got 3,000 odd schools with the Atomwide acquisition that came in last year. And I guess they're growing in their own right as well. How close are you to that?
Yeah, I mean, let's do market focus rather than products for a minute. We were very clear that we were going to go for London and the South East and public sector. London and the South East was my exit from Wigan. There's no way Wigan will ever grow as fast as London. Brexit or no Brexit, it just doesn't, right? So there was a clear focus here where the growth in the UK was. And the focus on the public sector, which probably sounded a bit strange when austerity came out, was the government set a target if we want a third of spend to be with SMEs, small, medium-sized businesses, by 2022. So suddenly we're in an environment where you don't get a tick for buying BT or IBM, you get a tick for selling some like us. So we went for the two growth markets. And we'd everything. I'll do public sector, then I'll come back to commercial in a minute. So probably about 30% of our sales now are public sector and private healthcare. So as you say, we got everything from central government. I can't name them for obvious reasons, but some pretty well-known parts of central government, right?
In London?
Possibly, yeah.
Round about Westminster?
Possibly, right. We're in over 100 councils now, out of about 400 and something, right? So, you know, we're a long way off starting this. Coming down, as you say, the entirety of London Grid for Learning, all the apps and things that go across there, we've not just got 3,000 schools. Our app developers, we've got 2 million paid users of our apps. We wanted Office 365 experience. We've got over 1 million Office 365 users now. It's the largest single deployment in Europe. We needed skill sets like web filtering. At our data centre in Orpington, we web filter over 1 billion images a day to try and protect kids. When we were trying to move into NHS, we had this chicken and egg problem of how do you sell to a NHS hospital when you've never sold to an hospital before? Well, you go and buy the largest provider of comms and IT to private hospitals. So as you say, I love your 100, it's not quite 100%, probably 70%, probably every one you can think of, Portland, Wellington, Harley Street, Chard, London Bridge, all of the famous ones are ours. And that gave us great credibility in the NHS, and we've now got about 15 NHS trusts, shortly to go into the 20s. But our first foray into it was universities. 15 of the big universities are with us as well. With the commercial end, we've got everything from Coca-Cola, Citrix, Asos, Carluccio's, Halfords, Express by Holiday Inn, it goes on and on. In London, even TalkSport is one of ours. Every sports report comes in one of our telephone lines.
Big responsibility.
Absolutely. I look at it like this. Every time Liverpool score, we make 1.5p.
Okay, okay, moving on. And some of the metrics around about the business we find very attractive as a shareholder. You've had 15 years of consecutive EBITDA growth. You have a throw off a nice dividend, and your cash flow generation is exceptionally attractive as well. What are the key KPIs for you when you're sitting down looking at what you want to achieve over the next 12 months, 24 months?
The only way you're going to get 15 consecutive years of rising EBITDA is if it's predictable. And predictability is based on recurring revenue. So we want a business where it's roughly 80% plus recurring revenue. We send you a bill every single month. Now, when you move into things like IT, you can't help that every now and again you refresh and sell a bit of kit. I don't mind selling a bit of kit. I don't like selling a lot of kit. But the other way around, it's got to be something where we can get it to around about 20-21% EBITDA at the bottom. There's no point selling stuff if it doesn't make any money. There's no point selling stuff if it constantly needs capex. I hate capex. I just don't. The idea of every time I make £1 million, I have to spend £1 million to keep it going. What's the point? I mean, I grew up with Lord Weinstock. You know, I'm an absolute cash is king man. 80 to 100% of our EBITDA turns into cash. If anyone wants to have an argument, by the way, as to is EBITDA the right measure? For some like us, it's the best approximation to cash flow, so it is. But when you get down to, if the guys want to talk free cash flow yield, you know, in an era of low interest rates, we're making 6 to 8% free cash flow yield. That's what we like about it. It's a cash machine.
Yep. And you talked about efficiency, and before, you've got a very capex-light model, which is great. Is there anything in the horizon that would change that?
Only fractionally. The KPIs, I run this business on twos. I've got three twos. One of them is, you know, I want dividend cover way over two. It's over three at the moment. You know, I want EBITDA net debt under two as fast as I can. It's 1.8 at the minute. But in terms of capex, I want it way under 2% of sales. Even now, which ticked up fractionally with the IT businesses, it's still not 0.8. It's way below one.
Yeah.
If you come into this room, this is our boardroom, right, and you have a proposal that costs more than 250k, you're not allowed in. It's a very simple rule.
And what's the end game? What do you think? 5 years' time, 6 years' time? Will Adept be acquired itself? Will you continue with your acquisition strategy and the day job that you've got at the moment, organic growth?
I don't think a PLC can plan for an end game unless you think, right, I'm now going to put it up for sale, get out. In a sense, 2006 was the end game for the individual investors because they can quietly get in and out whenever they want to. We'll carry on doing this and buying businesses and bulking up so long as there are attractive deals at sensible prices. If ever it got to a point where I think the market's so overheated now, you can't do this, and therefore this is a business that's on a 3, 4, 5% organic growth rate, then you have to think, okay, shouldn't it now be in somebody else's hands? That's not what we can see at the minute, right? So we'll just keep going. It's just more of the same because it works.
And what about yourself? You've still got a reasonable equity stake, even though you've sold down. When do you think that you might be hanging up your hat?
I'm still sat with 3%, so I'm sat here with pretty much share prices, 2.5 to 3 million quid. You know, it's not inconsiderable, right? I'm 58, not 68, right? I can't see me packing in and going home gardening. That would drive me mad, although I do like gardening, to be fair, right? I could see a situation where at some point I might go executive chairman and go, say, part-time and control acquisition strategy. But that might be what the business needs. You know, we've now got five operating entities. If we get to the point where we've got seven or eight, then it might well be that the current role of radio has to be naturally split into two anyway.
Yeah, natural evolution. Last year, you did sell down some stock. Ironically, it was Downing that had, if you like, persuaded you to sell down some of that position because we wanted to take a stake. The share price fell on the back of it, which seemed a bit ironic. Since then, one of your board directors, Chris Kingsman, has also bought a significant amount of equity. So the shareholder list has changed around a bit. Can you just give a bit of background, though, as to why you took money off the table at that juncture? Because I think it was the first time, really, that that you'd ever done it?
I'd sold a very small amount previously to pay a tax bill. That's 14 years in, I took some money off to pay my house off. I don't think that's particularly unreasonable after 14 years. And I think that the best director sales are the ones that are organised properly, where either somebody else in the board or another big shareholder who's been pumping and saying, can we have more liquidity, release it. So I mean, the irony was, we organised it very sensibly that you released it. And I was always told, make sure that any bit of bad news perception of us is outweighed by more good news. And the irony was, we handled that bit, and we bought Atomwide and became the largest player in IT and education in London, and everybody seemed to ignore that deal. I'd go back and have a look at it. I think it was quite a smart one.
It was a good deal. Yeah, very good. Ian, it looks as though there's been a bit of liquidity in your shares, which is, for a micro-cap, small-cap stock, is quite unusual sometimes. Would it be right to say that there's been liquidity and perhaps some institutional interest in the company? Certainly deserves it.
The institutions don't tend to announce it unless they take a 3% stake, and often they come in and start to build. So if you're asking me, have there been two or three purchases of like 300,000 to 500,000 in the last 2 or 3 months? The answer is yes. You can see that in the volumes.
You can see it, yeah. And you sit at a discount to your peers in terms of the larger market caps in the sector. Is that something that's frustrating to you, or?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that. I think one is, because we've moved probably fastest from telecoms to IT, I'm not quite sure who our peers are anymore.
Yeah.
Is the first bit. And I think we may have to take it onto a more generic thing of, you know, what should a price be when you've got a free cash flow yield of like 6 to 8%, regardless of what sector you're in? You know, that's now moved into organic growth. And I think that's the message we've kind of got to get across.
And how do you get that message across?
Doing videos like this.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.